Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Paddock Party. I guess we're just going with that name now. I'm Vince. I'm here with James and Mark, and we missed you last week for the Japan Grand Prix. I know words. Life gets in the way and all that kind of stuff. So we will briefly talk about Japan, but we'll probably move on very rapidly to Bahrain, because that was a bit of a more exciting race, I think we can all agree. You guys reckon?
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan.
So Japan was a little interesting in the couple of days.
It was a race.
I mean, there was a few little interesting facts, like it's the first time they've had a camera helicopter in like 30 years or something like that. I saw lots of different speculation on reasons to why they've not used a helicopter in so long. Japan's in a bit of a different slot to what it normally is, so it's a bit drier and the weather's a bit calmer, apparently. It was just a little fact that popped up that I noted down that I thought was interesting.
I didn't know this. Cameras on helicopters?
Yeah, some reason they haven't been able to fly the camera chopper at Suzuka for a very long time.
Okay, so crane booms and things like that.
Okay.
I didn't notice. I didn't watch. Thank goodness.
Like it completely caught me by surprise as well. I can't say that I'm observant enough to notice whether or not there's a helicopter shot in any given race.
I will say, though, for me, the highlight was the constant red flags in practice.
Right? I was about to say practice was actually really interesting because of all of the fires that they were setting with the sparks.
Yeah. I couldn't keep up with the number of comments that people were making about, let's just turn up like non-combustible, non-sparking skid blocks. And we're going to have this in about 5 minutes. Is that how quickly we're going to be able to do it? Match weight, everything else? Anyways, commentators didn't have much else to talk about there.
Well, you know, I kind of wish they hadn't done anything about the grass catching fire, but we'll get to that. The other thing that that obviously came up through a free practice in Japan was Jack Doohan having a pretty big crash, turned in through turn one with the DRS still wide open, because apparently this is the one track where they don't have to brake for turn one. So technically the DRS is still allowed to be used into that corner. Technically, and he just forgot to turn it off, went straight off into the barriers at 330 kilometers an hour, which is slightly terrifying to watch.
It worked in the simulator, it's fine.
Yeah, apparently.
When he remembered to close the DRS.
Yep. Or apparently, I think so. I heard someone say that the simulator never punished him for not closing the DRS on the entry to turn ones. Whether it automatically did it when he hit a certain point or whatever the case was, disconnect between Alpine simulator runs for Doohan and him actually racing on.
So, yes, there was 6 red flags through the free practice sessions. More, I think.
Something like
that. I can't remember now. Then we had qualifying. I think most of what happened through qualifying with the Japan GP was pretty much, you know, everyone ended up roughly where you would expect them to be. There was more fires being set by the track. But then there was Max's lap to clinch pole for the weekend, which turned out to be incredibly important. That lap was just wild.
It was amazing.
I think you were paying.
I think I watched that back a couple of times, and I love the new shots where they're doing comparative laps between the two cars. They're really useful to see. But at no point in time was there anything more than like a bee's dick between the two cars, except at that final chicane. So that was just nuts the way he braked in there to get that.
In what is clearly turning out to be not a great car this year, he's still doing crazy things with it.
Still doing Max things,
pretty much.
Then there was a race.
Cars going around in circles, as some people would say.
Some of them went to the pit lane.
Maybe once.
Yeah, some twice. It was not a fun race. Let's just be honest with that. It was probably one of the more boring races I think I've seen for a very long time.
Okay,
I think
that Suzuka used to be amazing. It no longer is.
Yeah.
Despite the FIA's best attempts to make these cars much more aerodynamically stable and able to follow each other closer, so many of Japan's corners or Suzuka's corners, I should say, are just high speed, and these cars can still high to medium speed, and these cars still cannot follow each other.
Yeah, and I think the track is a little bit narrower as well, and these cars are obviously the widest and longest they've ever been and heaviest. So I think the only way we're going to get back to good racing at Suzuka is if they, you know, future regs like the 26 regs, which are going to make the cars a bit smaller and lighter, I think. That might hopefully help to bring back a bit of the magic that it used to have. James, something that you picked up pointed out to me from the end of Japan is that Doon wasn't able to get himself out of the car. No. He had to be pulled out, basically, by Ocon and one of the engineers for Alpine.
So, obviously nursing some sort of injury through the weekend. Hiding it pretty well, to be fair, because that was essentially the first evidence anyone saw of him having an injury or something on his left arm. It could have been just because, you know, throughout free practice and quali, he wasn't really put under that much strain when driving the car, which is, you know, they're not driving it for hours on end. But, you know, during the race, he might have hurt himself again, but certainly interesting to see. But since he was in Bahrain, I think he was doing okay.
There's been some movement as well around what I'm going to call my prediction of Lawson. I know I'm kind of maybe skipping over here, but I'm starting to get skeptical about him.
Starting? Yeah, he finished 17th in Japan, whereas Yuki, in his first race in that Red Bull, which is apparently awful, put it in 12th. So, I mean, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
But better than Lawson ever did, for sure.
Only two races, so maybe he would have gotten better, but something tells me that his confidence, Lawson's confidence, has been crushed a bit.
I mean, wouldn't yours be? Get promoted to the big boy team, get two races, don't do the greatest in the world, and then suddenly you are just dumped to the feeder team. That was that image that I think I spoke about the other day of just all the team photos that Red Bull did in Japan. And there's one of Yuki and Hajar just chatting away, enjoying the time, and Lawson just sitting there, look dead to the world.
Yeah. So we should talk very quickly about the predictions we made from the China GP weekend.
Let's do it.
I did not do well out of this. I predicted, Mark got closest.
True.
I predicted Norris P1, then Russell, then Hamilton. Hamilton ended up 7th, Russell ended up 5th, which is actually his worst result so far this year, which is good for Russell. And Norris was 2nd. James, you got Piastri 1st, Verstappen 2nd, Hamilton 3rd. So with Piastri in 3rd and Verstappen winning the race, you were close but Mark enough. Had Verstappen, Piastri, Leclerc. Which, other than Leclerc, which was mostly just Ferrari doing Ferrari things. Well done, Mark.
Verstappen. We'll be nice.
Yeah. I still have Lawson to kind of pay for. It's very hard to look past Max. I have him in both my inner fantasy team of mine, and I'm the only person I'd swap him out for is Piastri.
Yeah, well, I think Max has proven that no matter how bad the car is, Max is still going to be Max. He can still put that thing on first if he really wants to, or if he's able to drag it on there. So I don't think we can ever truly count him out for the rest of the season unless that Red Bull gets even worse, which is always possible.
It is possible, yes.
The moment they think they can't win a prize, they will stop and they'll just fully switch focus, right? And that decision's not far away.
Yeah, you got to think, right?
Yep. Okay. We didn't do predictions for Bahrain, did we?
No, because we didn't get to catch up.
Yeah, boring race. We fell asleep. We almost didn't watch Suzuka's.
Yeah.
But yeah, ahead of the race, I wouldn't have picked the outcome. So I'm not going to predict anything. And like, I wouldn't have picked I'm blindly just a Piastri guy right now, right? I think we all are. We're heavy Piastri people.
Wonder why?
Well, not biased.
No, not at all. No bias here.
No bias.
Just like the commentators on Sky Sports. No bias at all. Just like purely what's the word? I can't remember the word.
Aren't they all
neutral?
Neutral, but isn't that just the FIA feed that we got, by the way?
What do you mean?
I'm talking about the view. We basically got nothing of the race direction in Bahrain was atrocious.
Race direction is always the same. So it doesn't matter which feed or which commentary feed you're listening to. They get the same race direction, which is why everyone is complaining about it, no matter what language they listen to. It has been absolutely atrocious this year in terms of them giving enough information on the ticker on the side. They've made a couple improvements, but I feel like they've broken that thing. And then Russell's car, seeming to have quite a lot of electrical gremlins throughout the race, apparently broke the ticker on the side to the point where they were manually updating it, as far as we could tell, with lap-to-lap gaps and intervals rather than actually like live microsect updates, which was kind of funny to see.
They had no sector timings at all, right?
No, it was purely across the line, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
Which was hilarious.
So, I mean, have we closed the chapter on Japan? Properly closed the chapter on
I think we've said enough about that weekend.
Yeah. The only other thing that came out of there was a bit of speculation on Doohan, right? Sorry. And his long-term future in Alpine.
I think so. I think there was just renewed chat about his supposed 4-6 race clause in his contract as to how he was performing. We haven't heard anything since Bahrain, so I don't think there's really that much going on, at least not yet. So it's safe to say it's not just a 4-race contract clause. There's probably a few more races that he's got to prove himself yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So with Japan done, let's get up to...
There was one more thing for Japan. Carlos Sainz poop costing him nearly 36,000 euros.
Suspended, not all of it.
True, he paid 10, suspended 20 something. But the fact that he even had like a pass from the FIA doctor is just hilarious to me. Dude had the runs and the FIA charges him 36,000 euros for it. It's just a little bit on the silly side. But again, FIA and fines seem to be two words that are very linked to each other these days.
Yeah, nanny state much. Seriously. I mean, I get it. I get protocol, but this is somebody's not well. Yeah, good call there. I saw that and I was just like shaking my head.
Contender for most expensive poop ever, maybe?
Possibly.
Yeah, possibly.
But let's move on to Bahrain. On to Bahrain we go. All right. I, for one, certainly didn't expect this weekend to be as exciting as it was. I was expecting a pretty boring race, to be fair, because F1 has raced at this track a lot. And they have a lot of data and the weather is nice and warm. You know, it's not like they're going to be struggling for temperatures in their tires or it's not warm enough that they're overheating. So I was expecting a pretty boring race, to be fair.
Yeah, I had a similar inclination, especially around the McLarens. I thought they'd just waltz away into, you know, the desert night. But I was pleasantly surprised. The start, when Lando and Piastri, particularly in FP3, came in and did their laps, I was like, wow, that's just nuts.
They're just going to run away with it, yeah.
Yeah, but it was kind of a messy FP1. They had, which we should call out, there were 6 rookies that were driving, you know, their practice sessions. It was good to see. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. It was just, you know, just looking at what was happening on track. But the main call out there was also the upgrades to Ferrari, I guess, right? They had their new floor and a diffuser as well. Interestingly, they said it's not the best place. I think Charles said it wasn't the best place to demonstrate the benefits of the new upgrade. I wasn't sure if anyone else had big upgrades. I wasn't paying that much of attention to upgrades as such. But
neither.
I don't remember too many being... spoken about over the weekend, but yeah.
The other amazing thing, and sorry, I'm going back to a toilet thing, was a YouTube shot of Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz invading James Vowles's office toilet.
Oh, yeah. They both, during an interview with James Vowles, I can't remember who was taking the interview, but apparently both Carlos and Alex went into his trailer to use his bathroom before they went in. I think it was FP3 they were going into.
Yeah.
But apparently it's a ritual for them. The boys like to come and use James's toilet for some reason.
So, yeah, it's the executive toilet anyway, so we'll go there.
Must have the best bidet.
Absolutely. Before we continue on the shit jokes, we'll have to pivot and talk about FP1. Were there any other call-outs, James Vince? FP1?
I didn't watch that much of the free practice, unfortunately. I didn't get a lot of time. But yeah, I mean, it all just looked like it was going to shake out kind of how you would expect with, you know, from the free practice and from what we've seen this year so far, you would expect that both of the McLarens would easily be at the front and stay at the front.
Yeah. One thing to call out, when I was watching FP1, obviously it's the heat, the first laps on the hard tires, just 3-4 seconds off the pace. That's what I saw. I'm like, wow, that's just unreal. Obviously, it wasn't McLaren's doing it on the hard tires, but still 3-4 seconds in free practice where no one's really pushing, that says something.
And I think we did see that bear out through the whole weekend, that it almost looked like they brought one set, you know, one level too hard a tire for the whole set of the soft, medium and hard, because the softs lasted way better than anyone I think should have expected them to. And the mediums, you know, it almost looked like you could do a good 2/3 of the race distance on them in the end. Not that anyone did, I don't think, but yeah.
James? anything that came across
Not
your radar?
Really. I mean, the only thing from the free practices that I really thought was interesting and worth talking about was Alonso's ability to just yank off his steering wheel, which is quite a terrifying thing to have happen to in a Formula One car. That, and then also the following footage of when he got back to the garage showing his engineers how he did it, and he just constantly yanking that off. So obviously they've changed something with the steering wheel connection for his car, and it's obviously not working as well.
So what happens when you pull the steering wheel off a Formula One car?
Nothing, hopefully.
Probably nothing good. I mean, they take it off when they leave the car and everything like that, so I imagine it must go into some sort of like shutdown mode. That's... if that happens. Obviously it's not great for the electronics if they do it that way, but I imagine it's like a safety thing, right?
It's a hard reboot on a Windows PC. You may never come back up,
possibly.
As long as his brakes still work, which they should. Hopefully the steering will come off, should do nothing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. That's a good question. We should find the answer to that question. FP1, straightforward otherwise. Any of the rookies stood out?
No.
Not really.
There was a couple in there that I've never even heard of, like never heard their names before. I think they all finished like bottom 10, so I don't think there was anything spectacular.
It's good to see that they're getting some running, as they should.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. No one outstanding, as it were, just usual rookie things.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, it's a good thing. I think that they get some opportunity to kind of get familiar rather than get thrown in. Not everyone's Max that can come in and start driving at 16.
Exactly.
FP2 was unremarkable in the same way. So I think, when I watched it, I was like, McLaren's in front. Everybody else is kind of trying to figure out what's going on with their tires and how well they could manage it. There was no standout, right? There was no standout there.
And you always got to take any free practice results with a grain of salt at the best of times. And everyone kind of roughly being where they should be just kind of tells you, the track's probably going to perform in the Constructors' Championship order.
Yeah. Where did Alpine finish up in practices? I can't remember that.
Middling to high?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I don't think it was anywhere exceptional. I didn't notice it in the results.
No, I think they never set any good times, for sure. Just looking at the results now, Pierre Gasly finished 6th in FP3, but he's 1.3 seconds off Piastri's time at the front. So not representative at all.
Yeah, okay. And then I guess let's just move quickly to FP3. And FP3, the big call out there was where Lando was struggling. I watched him and he could not put a single lap on that was consistently good.
Wow. Okay. I mean, he was quite far off Piastri. I remember noting that, but yeah, I wasn't paying full attention at the time. So it's interesting that you actually were able to pick that out.
Because, I mean, you're watching all the runs and he'd make mistakes. I shouldn't say that. These guys are professionals. It was difficult for him to adapt to the car.
It wasn't clean.
It wasn't clean at all.
Yeah, you could tell when he wasn't feeling it.
And I think that the weather is a big part of it there, because you're going
the wind especially,
but also the heat, right? The wind and the heat. You got FP1 and FP2, which are very different temperatures, and with that will be wind being different. FP3 is kind of again sort of like FP2, but not. So it's again different time, slightly off running. So these guys have to adapt so fast.
Oh yeah,
it's not easy if the car is even slightly off kilter. One thing that the FP3 showed me was Norris and Piastri still in a league of their own. Their time management was amazing, and Piastri's lap was just out of this world. He put that on, and it was like, wow, how did he pull that out? No one could answer that.
Yeah. The only other thing I remember picking up was that Yuki was visibly struggling a lot with the Red Bull. Not to be, that's not particularly surprising. But he was definitely not setting very good times.
To his credit, Max was also practice having sessions. Troubles with that car.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody had struggles, but Max and Yuki, you could definitely see it. And the Red Bull is a challenge. The Red Bull is an absolute challenge. Nothing else untoward from my apart from... Was there an incident that happened over there in FP3? I feel like there was. I didn't take notes.
I think it was an Ocon crash.
That's right.
FP2 or FP3, though. I think it might have been FP3.
It wasn't a big one, though, from memory.
No. Slight little tap on the back end, but it did mean that there was a red flag and he had to go in for some fixing up.
Yeah. So that got us to qualifying with everyone going, you know, going to be amazing. Oscar's going to be one. Lando's going to be two, or the other way around. And no one knew what was going to happen next. Everyone was hoping that Max would pull a rabbit out. Would that be a fair statement to make?
I think especially after his lap at Japan. Yeah, I think everyone was just like, of course Max is going to complain about the car all weekend and then just suddenly put it on P1 for no discernible reason. No such luck for him, though.
George had issues in FP3 as well.
I completely missed that.
Yeah, George had a few issues there. Yeah, so I did not watch qualifying live. I watched the highlights and replay after the fact. And that's just because qualifying was at the worst possible time.
Mm-hmm. 2 a.m.
Yeah, and I couldn't stay up for the start of it.
I watched a replay as well, and I think this is probably one of the more interesting qualifying sessions. The bottom five out in Q1, kind of the ones you'd expect. You've got your Lance Stroll, your Bortoletto, your Lawson, and Behrman. Behrman was the one that surprised me, him going out at 20th, but I think he just struggled to put a lap together. And my favorite fact to come out of Q1 at Bahrain qualifying is that Lance Stroll has officially got the most Q1 exits of all Formula One ever.
Really?
Yeah. He's officially the worst qualifier, other than just not qualifying at all.
Is that on a the number, as an outright number, or is it as a percentage?
Just outright number, yeah. So he does have an unfair advantage of having participated in a lot more races in his 9 years.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's a situation.
Yep.
One day that'll get rectified.
We'll see. Moving on.
And then the spicy part of that Q1 section was that Nico Hülkenberg got a lap time deleted, but it was 40 minutes later. And he then should have ceded his spot in Q2 to Albon. So Albon got denied his opportunity to participate in Q2, and Hülkenberg used up an extra set of tyres participating in Q2 only to get demoted. So I think that was just a total shit show all around on the FIA's behalf.
It really was, considering that the FIA has been putting in so many measures to deal with track limits after the farce that we had a couple of years ago that was Austria, where I think they had 1,500 track infringement issues across the race. It's amazing that they still couldn't make that decision on the fly easily with the tech that they have to prevent 40 minutes of waiting. The qualifying was essentially over by the time Williams found out they had been essentially cheated out of a spot of Q.
Yeah, and it especially stings because Sainz made it through to Q3. You know, Albon should have also been able to make it through to Q3 as well, for sure.
Definitely been giving it a good shot.
It's just so unjust. It stings me so much because of how unjust it is.
Yeah, and I thought we were past the point of the FIA having issues like this. But I mean, to be fair, and this is sort of skipping ahead a little bit, I understand, but they also had a lot of issues during the race. They were quite a fair distance behind a lot of the actual on-track action when it came to giving out their penalties. I don't know what was going on with the FIA this weekend, but it seemed like they were on like a 10-lap delay.
I think there was a lot of action on track and that a lot of close action as well. And it just takes a lot of time to sift through, especially with the track limits issues. There's no easy, good solution to track limits.
Yeah, there is. Do you know what it is?
Grass.
Keep all four fucking wheels in the white lines. I've had this argument with many a friend about this, and I don't understand why everyone finds it so hard. If they have more than four wheels outside the white line, track infringements.
More than four wheels?
Well, you know what I mean. If they have four wheels off the track, they should get a track infringement for it.
I agree. They should. I just find it hard to police, right? How do you police it quickly? Till they have something in the white lines to kind of indicate that, hey, automatically this is off track.
Well, they already have cameras and sensors. That's how they're able to determine a lot of this stuff. And a lot of those cameras aren't accessible to the public. They're purely for the FIA to make judgments on. The commentators talk about it all the time. So they've got the resource, they've got the hardware to do it, I would say. Yep. It's just a matter of them actually
having the balls to enforce this stuff.
Maybe the manpower is the problem. They just don't have enough people putting eyeballs on the footage. And, yeah.
Most things that can be, you know, like all the timing sensors where they're optical and kind of give you a good guide. Track limits is one of those things that's probably one of the more challenging to police quickly. That's just my two cents. I agree with you. They should do it because the sport is geared towards it. But it's the last things that they haven't got.
I don't think it's so much that the sport's geared towards it. It's more that the drivers and the teams are geared towards getting any advantage that they can in the race, right? And unless you, as a governing body like the FIA, come down and say, if you do this, you're going to get penalized. If you just let them keep getting away with it and everyone does it, then you sort of lose your ability to police that now.
And there's, you know, what was happening in the race, which there was a lot of track limit violations during the race. But this was during a qualifying session, so there's a lot less pressure. There's not 20 cars doing 50-plus laps. And it was 40 minutes later. Like, you'd think the intervening time between the end of Q1 and the start of Q2 would be enough for them to check those last few laps and knock Nico's out. Knows why it took them so long.
Agreed, especially when they're looking, if they work their way from the bottom up, it should have been something that, you know, is straightforward.
Yeah.
I know it's not as easy as this, but I'm sitting here thinking you have 20 people who just go and review the lap that each of the drivers made and set their time on. And that takes you, what, a minute and a half to check the lap and a little bit longer to check it if they actually violated the track anywhere.
And I'm sure they'd be able to get volunteers to do it.
Yeah. Like, to me, again, just it seems like such an easy problem to solve, but for whatever reason, the FIA either doesn't want to or doesn't have the ability to solve it.
There's no desire yet. That's it.
No pressure.
Which from a governing body is ridiculous. Yeah. Of apparently, like, the greatest motorsport in the world. Yeah.
Just put some hard walls against it is what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's not going to end too well.
Sandals. Make every track like Jeddah.
Good lord. But to be fair, even in Jeddah, they have track limit violations because that front straight, remember the first year they had to put out a directive to stop the cars taking an extremely wide line through that last corner to get that straight line advantage. Everywhere you give an inch, the teams and the drivers will take a mile. Unless you sit there with a very hard fist and police it, they're just going to keep doing it.
Like you said, that's basically the whole sport. That's the whole point.
Yep.
Yeah. Just get any advantage you can, however you can. And it's very easy for them to police like aero regs and things like that because it's very much just a written rule. Whereas for some reason, it seems things like track limit violations are difficult for them to police for whatever reason. But I think we yapped on about that enough.
We did indeed.
So Q2, I was pleased to see Jack Doohan get up into 11th. And I watched Josh Revell's video about Isaac Hajar the other day, and now I feel like I'm a bit more about Isaac, and it's good to see that he's doing so well in the Racing Bulls as well, putting it up in qualifying. It's a good result for him as a rookie.
Yeah, he did do well. I also saw, well, I didn't see that video, but I was going to say I saw Jack finish up in 12th, 11th. Even where he started after other things. Essentially, I thought that was good. That's a good, very good, promising piece. I mean, now I'm showing my bias towards certain drivers from certain countries. That was very promising. I do have a little bit of a soft spot for his dad, and I grew up watching heaps of, well, it wasn't MotoGP, it was a 500cc superbike and superbike racing.
Mm.
So it was amazing to see that happen. Yeah, again, over there, like you said, the big thing in FP2 was the incident with Ocon, where it got red flagged. So not everybody could do two laps.
That's right. Yeah, it was a bit of a mess.
So that meant that people that were going out had to do only pretty much one lap and just make the most of it. So there was no banker in there. It was good also to see the fact that Carlos did well and didn't fail completely. Again, no real outstanding things in that pack. The timing sheets showed that everybody finished where they were going to finish.
I mean, it was a bit disappointing seeing Lewis at the bottom of Q3.
At a ninth in Q3.
And Verstappen and Lando, I think, were the other, Gasly, to be fair, were the other ones that were like, hold on, what's going on?
Yeah, in Q2, yeah, definitely. But Q3.
Sorry, I was talking about Q3, yeah. Not Q2. I'd skipped, my bad.
Yeah. Q3, absolutely. Hamilton, shocker. Verstappen, hey, was like, I was waiting for that lap. I'm like, come on.
I was going to say, after Japan, we're all sitting there going, all right, Max, come on, hurry up. Just do it.
See the line, Max.
Drive the lap, Max.
So the standout there was Pierre Gasly.
For sure.
100%.
What that man can do with it.
There's only one tractor in Formula One, and that's McLaren's car that Lando drives.
No, we all know that that was just Lando being Lando. Can't handle the pressure. I thought it was very telling that in the post-qualifying interview, when they asked Lando what his plan was he just said, I guess I'll aim for Q2 because Piastri is just going to lap everyone. And I think that just is emblematic of where Lando's head is at. I think we talked about it in our predictions video that a little bit that, you know, Lando just seems to not have the mentality completely.
Maturity, yes. He's got too much of a self-deprecating sense of humor, Lando does, to his detriment, I'd say. But yeah, that was a big shock. And it's a sign that in the three or four races, Oscar's got a better handle on the car. I'm not counting Lando out by any stretch of the imagination, but wheel to wheel, Oscar's the one to look out for.
Yeah, I mean, as biased as we might be, it's definitely seeming to be the public opinion now is that, well, you can't count the likes of Verstappen and Norris out of the championship race. And for a longer shot, you can't count out George Russell either, really. But Piastri seems to have come out of this race as the main title contender now.
Well, we haven't gotten to the race yet, but we should talk about it.
Probably.
Is there anything else that we have to cover on the...
Only other thing was it was nice to see Yuki pull out, a few really good laps. You know, it seemed like a good result to finish where he did in Japan, which was still not great, but better than Lawson. That was kind of the bar was just better than Lawson. But him qualifying 10th is actually a pretty decent result. He was not that far behind Max for most of it. Max's Q3 lap was still quite a bit faster than Yuki, but...
I was going to say, he was still 9/10 behind Max when it came down to it, but...
Yeah.
Doing well.
Yeah, in the earlier sessions, he wasn't that far behind Max. I think Max has just got that ability to, I don't know, push the accelerator pedal through the firewall somehow, you know?
Yeah, hashtag Max things.
Pretty much. Kimi Antonelli finished 4th?
In qualifying, yes.
Right. He had a very quiet session. Understated is what I'm going to say.
I have a feeling that his whole year is going to be him claiming 5ths, 4ths, and 3rds off of the likes of Max and Lando and Leclerc when they aren't able to perform.
Yeah,
certainly.
Because he's quick.
He's constantly just going to be in the shadows just because there's so many good races around him. But give him some time. I think he'll come into his own for sure once he gets a handle on the car.
Yeah, I think just as a rookie, you know, he's not necessarily going to be setting the world on fire. But even as a rookie, he is doing extremely well.
I mean, he's still 6th in the championships at the moment. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's only been 4 races, but he's still beating Hamilton, you know? So
yeah.
There was an issue with the George Russell, Kimi Antonelli starting positions after the...
Oh, that's right. They came out of their garage before Q2 officially resumed after Ocon had his off.
Correct.
I think it eventuated that then the guy who coordinates that within Mercedes, I can't remember his job title, he was on leave. And as such, the speculation was that the team they got the provisional restart time and took that as gospel truth and assumed that was correct and just sent him out.
Yep. Yeah, don't do that. So that basically meant even though George put on a pretty stunning lap, meant that he was not going to be the guy that started P2. And I think Kimi had the same issue as well. Yeah, so moving on from there, I guess we can start talking about what was probably the most exciting race we've had so far.
Yeah, I think definitely, so. Well,
definitely in terms of action we saw up and down the track. In regards to who won it, I don't think it was a very exciting race because Piastri just sort of pissed off into the distance and we never heard of him. We barely even saw him on the broadcast at all, even when he crossed the line, which we'll get onto later, but... The battles between Norris and Russell and Leclerc and everything up and down that area, certainly a lot more interesting than what I would have expected from Bahrain.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched the formation lap, and as the cars came off and the tires, basically tire one almost came off the tire, the cars, and I'm looking at it going, what has Ferrari done here? Why have they put mediums on when everybody else is on softs? I'm like, this is not going to end well.
Yeah, I had the same thought, and the thought reappeared when they did their first pit stop as well. But we'll get to that. Did you guys pick up anything particularly off the start? I know there's two rookies that I want to talk about from the start.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about Max. Max and Lando basically were side by side at the start.
Mm.
And what did Lando do? He edged forward slightly outside of his pit box.
In fact, if you watched the video, he did it twice, which was quite funny to see.
Yep.
And then we had little tattletale Max on the radio letting everyone know.
I loved it.
It was great.
It was great.
I was like, how much spatial awareness does that guy have? The amount of information his brain's processing to be able to make these split-second decisions is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, if you're sitting still and you're expecting every car to sit still around you, as soon as you see one of them move, you're going to notice.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be also focused on the red lights going off, right?
I mean, I think they were still prep. They were still in form. They were still waiting for the cars at the back to line up, weren't they?
Yeah, and Lando started rolling forwards quite early.
Yeah, the Max was probably just sitting there, just minding his own business, and noticed that out of the corner of his eye. But yeah, definitely not the start to a race you want.
Yeah,
not.
But at the end of the day, I don't think it really affected too much.
I think it did. I think it did. It definitely made the race more exciting having Lando get that 5-second penalty.
I think the penalty actually didn't make any difference at all. Unfortunately,
I don't think he lost the place for it. No, even when he took the penalty, I don't think he lost the position because of it.
No, I agree. There's no loss to the result, but there was a gain to the racing. You know, he wouldn't have been in P4, P5 even at certain points in time.
Yeah.
He would definitely have been P2 at the very least, quite early.
Yeah. Did add a bit more of a, ooh, what's going on here sort of tone to the race for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, apart from that, the start was fairly unremarkable. It was, George had a great start. He took off.
Brilliant.
Kimi
went backwards three places, which was pretty rough to see. He just didn't get a good start, I don't think.
Yep. Carlos did okay, but then very quickly he started getting overtaken. Max was good at the first part of the race. There was no real issues on his side. I think I can't remember what lap they started coming in for their first round of pit stops, but I'm going to say somewhere around 10. It felt early.
Yeah, something like that. The other thing I wanted to call out was Behrmann making five places at the start. That was amazing. Did you see the footage of that, the replay?
I didn't see the replay. I watched it live, and then, I didn't watch it. I watched bits and pieces, and the commenting wasn't great at that point in time when the highlights were going through. So I didn't refocus, but I saw how well he raced all through. So he finished up, 10th in the end?
Yeah, really good result. Starting from P20 in a Haas.
Yeah, says something about the guy.
Bear man, for sure.
What else happened at that point? Through the first 10 laps, you could see potentially what Ferrari were doing. I'm like, oh, this looks hard. Lando got quite a couple of two places at that start. He got in front of Charles.
He overtook Charles later in the first lap, I think.
Quite early. Like, it was straight in, I think.
Was it?
Yeah. Turn four?
Okay, yep.
Turn four into turn four, I believe he overtook. And then they settled into a rhythm for that first 10 laps where everybody was just doing regular things. Nothing significant happening. Up and down the track, it was straightforward. What happened to Hülkenberg?
He didn't really get a good start, did he?
Yeah.
I don't remember anything remarkable for him except for the fact that he got disqualified for his skid plate being too worn.
True.
Did he finish the... I don't even remember him, on track much. I thought
He just pretty much had a completely unremarkable race, really.
Yeah. To the point where I thought he actually went out early. So, but technically, the only person that didn't finish was everyone else was classified as a finisher.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Carlos.
Yeah. he had what I would describe as a very rough race. The guy, he just seemed to scream desperate in all of his overtakes. Like, none of them were clean. They were all really aggressive. And yeah, I'm surprised he didn't cause more issues for other drivers and himself.
I can't remember who he was overtaking when he got the damage to his side pod, but I thought it was Tsunoda. That's right. I thought it was amazing that Tsunoda got away without a puncture from that. That would have sucked for Tsunoda.
That was after the safety car, I believe.
No, I think Carlos's damage was the safety car, wasn't it?
Safety car, yeah. He retired after the safety car because I think by the time that the safety car resumed, he had been overtaken by everyone else because the aero damage was just so bad on the car. But yeah, his debris was the cause of the safety car.
That's right, yeah.
Which to me was a very extreme reaction to just having some carbon fiber on the track. Maybe the cars were a little bit too spread out for them to be able to VSC it and safely have marshals on the track clear that, but...
Yeah.
As we went through the pit stops, I think the first thing that was really surprising was actually the Red Bull pit stops. They were shocking.
Yeah.
Tech issues.
Yeah. It was a theme right through that race, like little tech issues, little gremlins following different teams at different points in time. So yeah. I found that quite curious. But because Ferrari were on those mediums, they were able to go longer. What, 7-8 laps longer?
It wasn't that big of a difference. They pitted on lap 18, so really only like five. For
Hamilton, it was. Hamilton got that leap as a result of being able to be offset and overtake through that middle stint. I think he picked off quite a number of people, including Max, Jack Doohan, because he came out in 12th. He went in at 7th or 8th and came out in 12th. 9 seconds after Oscar pitted, it was Charles and then Hamilton. And then 9-10 seconds between the two of them. Charles came back out. He came out just behind Lando. And 10 seconds behind him was Hamilton. But that got really excited there.
Hamilton did get basically pitted into traffic, though, which was rough for him. I think it limited him more than it helped him. And when they pitted mediums for mediums, I thought there was no way that it was going to work out for them because they were just going to be on the softs at the end and everyone else would be on the mediums and overtake them.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought this was going to be an absolute disaster because they had to change. Turned out Max, because he'd done 7 laps, he was already complaining of how shit the race was. And he was complaining big time that he had no speed, he was not able to turn.
They put him under the hards, right?
Yeah, they put him under the hards.
Yep.
And at that point in time, I think Kimi Antonelli came in and went on to softs. Yeah, he had 4 stops from memory in total, but was it 4?
Something like that. Mercedes' strategy for Kimi was just all over the place. And despite being, doing pretty well throughout the weekend, he just got really done over by their pit stop calls.
Yeah, he had bad timing. So when Charles and Lewis came in, they were 7. I'm looking at it now. They had 7 laps on the likes of Max, Gasly, 3 laps on Oscar, and George. But everybody else in front of them had pitted. Obviously, it was quite good to see Hamilton actually cut through the field a little bit, and he got past Max, right? It's not easy to get past Max, and this was in racing, right? It wasn't like safety car, none of this pit lane kind of shenanigans. It was actual racing, and that was all because of the tires. So I thought that was one of those really good things. Add to that, Charles also overtook Norris in that window. That just spoke to how horrible the tires were, right? If you were running the same tire with 4 laps of usage, or in Lando's case, 7 laps of extra usage than, say, Charles, you had no chance.
I think there was both an element of the undercut, and then, the tire advantage just finished him off, basically.
I don't think there was much of, like, if anything, you would have seen that because they had tires, the medium tires, they didn't lose as much time as I would have expected. But I noticed that when everyone went back on, the wrong tire to have was the hards. Anytime 100%. You were on the hards, you were just going to be screwed. And I'm like, that was one of those brilliant moves that Mercedes still pulled off. Though they screwed Kimi, they still put him on the softs and they put George on the softs. And that was the right call.
That was an absolutely genius call. I was very skeptical that he was going to make it. What was it, 27 laps or something he had to do on those softs? 23 laps?
Like that, yeah.
I think when the guys came in for their second set of pit stops under the safety car, lap 32, Ferrari had done not even the same amount of laps on the second set.
Yep.
Whereas everybody else got a free pit stop, except for poor old Kimi Antonelli, who had just come in on like lap 27. But yeah, so the safety car was a bit of a change. It again bunched up the pack and added a lot more overtaking potential, because everybody was actually in that spot. Only Max didn't pit. Max stayed on his.
It was Max it was and
a couple more
else.
Down the order.
Yeah, it was a couple more who just pitted not too long before the safety car as well. Who stayed there? Okay. Can't remember who though.
Well, backmarkers. No need to talk about backmarkers.
Jack doing.
Wow.
I think it might have been a Hulkenberg and, yeah, someone maybe doing, or maybe Lawson or Alonso. Yeah, I don't remember.
Ajar doing. I think Gasly pitted again. No, Gasly stayed. I'm looking at the list.
I was going to say, unless you got a list or something in front of you, there's no point in trying to think about it.
No, I've got a list in front of me. So it was lap 28. You had 27. You had Ocon, Antonelli, Hulkenberg. 28 was Gasly, Doohan, and Ajar. And then 32, the pit stop, the safety car. And off that pack, only Kimi Antonelli came back in. So everybody else basically stayed. So if it was a couple of laps later, that would have been very interesting for these guys who, I mean, especially the guys that stopped early. So Oscar Piastri, George Russell, what would they have done?
It's definitely something to think about. I think Piastri definitely got very lucky with the safety car, though. I think he was like two corners from the end of the track when the safety car got called.
Yeah, it was perfect timing for him.
So any longer on that decision, and essentially everyone except Piastri would have gotten that free pit stop.
There was definitely some influence there, I'm sure. Jeez. Conspiracy theories would say that, you know, the owners of McLaren from Bahrain, aren't they? The Bahrain something fund.
Sovereign Welfare Fund or something like that.
Yeah. So who also own the track and, you know, putting on the party and everything else. Yeah, after
that. After that, the entire race, I was completely consumed and didn't notice anything else. I was just completely consumed by Norris battling Hamilton, battling Leclerc and getting held up by Leclerc, and then chasing Russell to try and get P2 off him before the end. I think that was like 20 plus laps. Basically, as soon as Russell put those softs on, that consumed my focus because it was so interesting to try and figure out if Norris was going to get there in time.
Controversial opinion on that one. Norris screwed himself.
100%.
So, I'll go through that in 1 second. But if it was, say, Max or Piastri, that wouldn't have happened. Now, what was the first mistake? The overtake on Hamilton, the first overtake, he went off track.
Mm-hmm. Had to give the place back.
Forced the issue in some instances, right? Rather than, like, A, he wasn't fully set up. B, forced it. Didn't work out. Had to give it back. Another lap gone. And he didn't get it back straight away. It took, I think, 2 laps before he got past.
He noticeably lost a lot of his momentum having to give the place back to Hamilton. And then he had to set himself back up again. He had to get back in to, you know, within half a second and have the right amount of regen available to deploy and try and get him.
Correct. Same with Charles. Same problem there. He tried a dummy, I think, and went past. Charles defended very well. Charles got a great ability to defend at this track, and he's one of the few people that has done so against Max to some success. George has those two guys to thank for. Actually, I'd say George just has Lando to thank for that, because Lando shot himself in the foot. Because if he was a little bit more clinical, he would have made those overtakes and got P2. Now, not that in the standings it's going to say anything, but to me, that's just emblematic of where I see Norris these days.
And then Russell just quietly putting, you know, tires on and then just quietly driving his race and extending tires to their absolute limit. Like, he's just become, I think, a bit of a tire whisperer, especially after, I think it was Spa last year, where he got disqualified for being underweight because he'd taken the hards to their absolute limit.
Run
as well.
So long race. On those hards, yeah.
Yeah.
I think George is having a fairly understated season, right? He's mm-hmm. so consistent. Just putting the results up, knowing that he's not going to be able to compete for one or two on a regular basis, just get the job done. I don't think George did an extraordinary kind of job on the softs. The softs were good tires to be on. Just they were better than the hards by a long stretch and were pretty comparable to the mediums. So, you know, what did he do from 32 to 57? That was the second stint waning fuel. I'm just saying, you know, it's not the same job as what he did in Spa. That's a different league. This one was just, this was a good job. Well done, George. Completely understated. It was trying. It was definitely testing, but a lot of other people did the same thing. I think Kimi Antonelli did the same thing as well on those softs.
Although apparently this issue was kind of starting to spread a little bit, but I don't think anyone was dealing with quite as many electrical issues as Russell was.
Granted. Granted. I'd give him, right? And I don't think it's just time management there. I think that was just presence of mind and composure to the chaos that was happening around him in that car. Luckily, the steering wheel didn't come into his hands.
Well, the team told him, you might just lose the dash completely. Just keep driving.
It was certainly fascinating to watch, like, the cascade of failures that he had in his car. How it started with the transponder. Everyone noticed that George kept dropping down from like second to ninth to 20th at one point. And then I think they gave up. They turned off the ticker when he was sitting in 20th and didn't move. And then like the DRS limitation stopped working for him. Whether that is his car or if it's tied to the transponder, we're not sure. I wouldn't have a clue at least. But, you know, him accidentally turning it on outside of the DRS zones was a bit of a funny one, bit of an unfair moment there for him, which I think he got let go at, which is fine. But then seeing how it just went downhill for Russell, and then hearing McLaren telling Lando that they can only use DRS when they're 100% sure they're in the DRS zone. So whether George's failures were cascading to the rest of it or if it just broke the transponder system on the track completely. Very strange problems.
Didn't Ferrari also have DRS problems?
I did hear there were a couple of other teams that mentioned, hey, don't use your DRS unless you're absolutely sure. Yeah. Or unless we say, kind of thing.
But George had just a whole level of other problems on that car.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was definitely patient zero in the transponder zombie virus.
Transponder zombie virus. Jeez. Okay. That was the race. I think that was quite exciting. I enjoyed it completely. There was a little brilliant bit of potential drama with George basically being subject to a 5-second penalty for opening DRS, as you said, James, but I'm happy nothing came off it.
I think it would have been very unfair for them to give him a penalty at that point, for sure, considering that he can't, you know, him and the team can't do anything about the transponder, which is FIA tech that goes in each of the cars. So it would definitely be very, very upsetting if they'd handed him a penalty.
I don't think it's a transponder. I think it was a car electronics failure, because that's the issue. It was a car electronics issue which turned off the dash, turned off and turned it on when he pressed the radio button.
Well, I mean, unless we get anything directly from Mercedes or the FIA, we're never really going to know what actually went wrong. I'm sure we'll get something eventually, maybe a few months down the track when Mercedes doesn't think it's sensitive information anymore or whatever the case may be.
The detail on the failure. Yeah, absolutely.
I will say before we do wrap up for that, it was kind of funny to see everyone kind of giving Mohammed Ben Sayem a bit of the cold shoulder. I believe Hamilton basically just ignored him in Parc Fermé after the race. And I think the flag waver, I can't remember his name.
Look at him.
I'm not even going to try and say that because I will butcher it. Basically giving him a thumbs down live on TV, which was great to see.
Yeah, it was good to see that. And I saw Luca di Montezemolo turn up and give Piastri and Norris a bit of a pat on the back for the way they're going. Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah, I think that wraps us up for the race in Bahrain. So we should put in our predictions for Saudi Arabia, Jeddah.
Jeez. Jeddah. What's the form guide saying, Jeddah?
Very, very fast, very narrow track. They have to be on it 100% of the time to make it round the lap in one piece. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting for sure. It's going to be a good test of our predictions so far and where everyone is in the standings.
The weather's going to be similar.
That reminds me, actually, before I move us on, the one thing that I noted when I was getting myself organized for tonight was just how close the top four are in the Drivers' Championship now. So you've got Norris in 77 points. Gasly's 3 points behind at 74. Then Max is only another 5 points behind at 69.
Nice.
And then Russell is on 63 points. So
definitely feel like it's one of the closest starts to a season that we've had for a while.
I have never paid that much attention to world driver's standings, the points. I was just turned up for the watching the races and talking about strategy and all that kind of stuff. But I think I'm going to be watching this year's quite closely because I would love for there to be a four-way title fight right to the end. That would be so good.
Four-way title fight would be great.
I think there's hope. However, I'm not sure any one team has really shown how dominant they can be. Even to that extent, I'd say McLaren.
They're definitely the easy bet.
They're the safe bet right now, yeah. Easy and safe. However, I think if you analyze what's likely to happen in the next few months before the summer break, I think that it's likely to look like, at best, a three-way fight for the second place.
I'll take it.
Yeah. The key thing is how much can we basically keep getting, to quote Pierre Gasly, getting in the way of Norris, right? Just sticking the car in there and then basically taking points away constantly.
Yeah, 100%.
Are we going to see 6-8 different race winners this season? Probably not.
I hope so. That'd be great.
I would too.
Kimi gets his first win. Who else would be
Russell still needs to get on the board.
Yeah.
Hamilton gets a Ferrari win.
Hamilton and Leclerc getting wins, I think would be nice. I'd like to see a Williams on a podium. I think that'd be great. Yeah. I feel like they're getting there. Outside of that, that's all I really see. I don't see anyone outside of that. Those four teams really getting a win under their belt.
Alonso a rain win.
Please. Please, that would be so good.
I do want to point out that there's four people currently with no points in the championship. Three of them are rookies and one of them is Alonso.
Which is rough.
So I don't think it's looking good for that one, Mark.
Well, you know, I'm going to hope.
Do we want to quickly do some predictions for next week then?
Yep. I'm going to be boring and do Piastri, Russell, Norris in that order.
See, I'm going to be kind of boring, but not as plain. I've got some pepper in me. I'm going to say Piastri, Russell, Verstappen.
Hardly more spicy.
That's why I say it's a little bit of pepper.
I think I'm going to, for the fun of it, bounce back and say it'll be Norris. I'm going to say Piastri's going to come fourth.
Oh, trail. I can't believe trail you could of our do that boy. To our boy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to, like, I'm predicting something. I don't know. This. I've never really watched Jeddah, to be honest. I've only ever watched bits of highlights. So I mean,
considering the race is at 3 a.m. for us, it's...
I think it's actually the worst.
We go up and race. Yeah.
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 But, it's kind of like a... At some stage, somebody's going to have to push, go and take somebody out in the front. So it could be the race, right? So I'm predicting that Norris manages somehow to come P1... 2 and 3, I'm going with Max. And for his first podium, we'll go Kimi Antonelli.
Oh.
I'm okay to be
sure, honest. Sure.
All right, just give you some spice. If you think, if we want to go plain Jane, then yeah, you know what that is. I'll throw in the spice and then see what happens. So there's not just salt, pepper, but we'll get some cayenne in there as well. Okay, so next week we have a race at unforsakenly 3 a.m. Australian time, which I...
Very un-Australian times.
I will not watch. I can promise you I will not watch it. So I will be catching up on highlights after the fact. Even the practice sessions are horribly timed. There's nothing good about this race.
Nope. For
us. Yep. So we'll probably be a little laggy when it comes to getting out the next podcast again, regardless of whether we actually catch up and do it.
I liked the race. I thought it was exciting. Personally, it was good stuff. So I was sad for Max.
But I think I know what you're talking about, though. I think apparently it's the first time Max has finished out of the top five since like the start of last year or something like that.
Something like that. Some ridiculous numbers. So. Okay, good to know.
And George's been top five of every qualifying and race so far this year.
I foresee that continuing.
Definitely.
So, what do you make of the driver of the day kind of being Lewis Hamilton?
It's a popular vote. It's nothing more. I mean, Kimi got a driver of the day, I think, where was it, in China for starting eighth and finishing eighth. So like, I don't think there's really a rhyme or reason to it unless a driver actually has a very decent performance. To be fair, my driver today is probably Behrmann. I mean,
yeah,
he did exceptionally well, but you know, that usually comes down to a popular vote online.
Yeah, I mean,
I distinctly recall Perez getting a bunch of driver of the days for completely bottling qualifying and then driving the Red Bull when it was at its most dominant back up to the top 10 and people going, oh, wow, he did a great recovery drive. And it's like, yeah, he had to recover from being shit.
Yeah, I just think that things like that, I mean, they add value to the spectacle, being able to contribute as a spectator. But, you know, it's got to be guided. A little bit. We've got to have the ability for people to say, these are the 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 and why, right? Mm. It's not just driver of the day, it's drive of the day.
Yeah, 100%.
So anyways, hopefully they'll find ways of improving it. I think fan engagement and community engagement's the critical part of all of this journey.
For
definitely.
Sure.
Okay. On that note, so this has been another podcast from the Paddock Party crew, who are going to say goodnight and thank you very much for your limited attention listening to us. We'll keep doing this because it's a little bit of fun and a lot of learnings for all of us. Thank you, gents.
Good night.
Goodbye.